Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising.
Hey listeners, it's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue is the end-to-end solution for insight, outreach, and analytics for higher ed advancement and stewardship teams around the world. Recently, we launched Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub, where subscribers have access to over 100 hours of free, on-demand original series and podcasts, all created with fundraisers in mind. We're thrilled to feature the Development Debrief on Evertrue Studios Podcast Network. Check us out at evertrue.com/studios.
Hello and welcome back. This season, we've focused pretty heavily on artificial intelligence, and we've had a series of very interesting conversations. I am, however, excited to step away from that briefly with this week's episode to talk about management. Management is something that I'm personally passionate about, and I feel that there are not a lot of resources out there to help managers, whether they're brand new or seasoned, to make their teams better and improve them. So lucky for me, I met Elizabeth Keppel, who has put together a training program with 5 ways to take your team to the next level. And when I learned about this, it was absolutely no question that I would want to bring her on and share those 5 tips with us. This episode is more tactical than our episodes usually are, because we're going to talk about specific things that you can implement almost immediately. And I know for me personally, there will be a few of those, and I will mention those at the end of the episode. So a little incentive to stay with us all the way through. So let's learn a little bit more about Elizabeth. Elizabeth Keppel is the Senior Director of Annual Giving and Digital Strategy at Johns Hopkins University, where she leads a comprehensive university-wide annual giving program. Prior to joining the Hopkins team in 2020, Elizabeth served in several roles at the University of Florida, most recently as the Director of Development for Annual Giving and Strategic Initiatives. In that role, she led UF's Leadership and Annual Giving program, which served as the organization's talent pipeline for major gift fundraisers. At the outset of her fundraising career, she worked as an assistant director on the advancement team at her alma mater, the College of William and Mary in Virginia. Elizabeth has a Bachelor of Arts and a Master of Education in Higher Education Administration from William and Mary and a Project Management Professional, PMP, certification. Now let's get started. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the debrief.
Hi. Thanks, Catherine. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yes, we're here to have a conversation that I think everyone needs about managing.
Absolutely.
So I know you've spent some time putting together tips for managers and trainings. And when you told me that, I was so grateful because there isn't a whole lot in the marketplace for this. What kind of spurred doing this and taking time outside of your day job to put this together for others?
Sure. So I've been managing for about a decade in kind of the higher education philanthropy space, but it's only been in the past year and a half or 2 years where I've moved from managing individual contributors to managing managers. Mm. And so in my role as their leader, I've been trying to think through, okay, how do I equip my team members with the essential skills and tools and resources that they need to feel confident and comfortable in the management space? And so it was really born out of necessity. And I found myself kind of putting together a lot of these tools ad hoc and realized over time, you know, there's something here. And there's kind of a key set of tools that I wish I had had available. And so how can I help other managers get this information a little earlier on in their careers?
And what was the shift like going to managing managers? Is it a whole nother ball game or is it similar? What did you find?
Yeah, you know, I will say the key skills and tools that you use when you're managing individual contributors are the same, right? It's practicing empathy, building in a good system for two-way feedback. So the core principles don't change, mm-hmm. but I will say my coaching has kind of ramped up a lot and my directives have ramped down, right? Because you're dealing mm-hmm. with folks who have more experience in the industry. And so less of our conversations are do X, Y, and Z. And more of our conversations are around, All right, let's role play. How do you think you'll handle this conversation? Do you want to try it out with me? How do you think you're going to position this feedback that you're going to offer? So I'm finding that the format of our conversations are a little bit different, but the core principles don't change.
So let's take the clock back to a decade and change ago. You said what you wished you knew. What
Yes.
did you wish you knew when you started managing, and what was your role and what place in your life for you? Let's go back.
Sure. So, in fairness, I started managing student employees in my very first job right out of college. 21 years old, I was a phone-a-thon manager. So I had 45 student employees that I was managing. And certainly that was a good place to learn some of the kind of key components. But really, when I started managing in earnest, I was 22. I was an assistant director of annual giving at William and Mary, which was my alma mater. And I had moved from being the phone-a-thon manager to being the lead for student and young alumni giving. And so in that capacity, I was managing one full-time employee who is our coordinator and a graduate assistant for
It's such
student
a great first
philanthropy.
job.
It was such a great first management job, a really good opportunity to try out that skill set on an audience that's not, a college student who's working 10 hours a week. So that was my first management role. And I felt like I was doing a good job at the time, right? And the way that I was assessing this was I helping them feel good about their jobs? And so I spent a lot of time saying, good job, or I really liked how you did that program. And in my mind, they were high performing people. I was telling them that they had done a good job. I was helping them troubleshoot when it came up. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing my management job. And it wasn't until later, when I had had a couple of different managers myself and seen different behaviors modeled, that I realized, I probably wasn't offering as much feedback as they needed, and I probably wasn't approaching things in always the right ways. And so it's only in retrospect, right, that I've gained that perspective. But at first, I think what I'll share is, I wish that I had known that giving someone feedback really is a gift. And the kindest thing that you can do for someone is to tell them specifically what they are doing well and those areas where you need to see some improvement, or you see an area where they are struggling and need some additional support. And I think in my mind, I'd been providing feedback in the form of good job, but that actually wasn't ultimately that helpful, right, in terms of their development and their growth. And so I think specific feedback, timely feedback. I will never forget my first ever performance review. I had a great relationship with my supervisor, and he was also kind of a good job boss. But the first performance review, I got like a laundry list of 15 things I was doing really well, and then like five things I needed to improve on. And my key takeaway was like, wow, I wish that I had just received that feedback in the moment of, here's a specific thing you did well. Here's a specific area that you maybe should have brought people on board on more quickly, or a way that you should have handled this situation differently. And I wish that I had just received that in real time at the time when I needed to make those decisions so that I could course correct quickly. And so it was both a reflection on how I spent my early time managing, but also how I was managed earlier in my career that helped me realize regular, ongoing, specific feedback really is kind of the secret sauce for helping people thrive in an environment of growth.
So let's zoom forward to today, now that you have years of experience under your belt and increasing numbers of people that you've managed. You've developed five ways to take your team to the next level. So let's go through what those are.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first way, right, is a two-way cadence of feedback. And so, right, many managers kind of have a sense of the basics, which is giving clear feedback, giving it regularly. And I think many of us have, despite what we were taught when maybe we were student leaders or earlier on, we've gotten rid of the compliment sandwich, which I think only serves to muddy the message and tries to spare feelings at the expense of giving actually kind of actionable, helpful feedback, right? The way that I would suggest kind of taking that to the next level, right, is explain why you're giving the feedback. Whether it is, I saw something that happened in the presentation this morning, and I noticed that there might be a way that you could frame this situation a little more effectively. And I'd like to share that with you. I care about you and I want you to be successful in this role. And so if I see something like this holding you back, I want to share that with you. I also think that this is a chance to get off your high horse a little bit as a manager and say, I'm offering you this feedback because someone was able to give me some really helpful feedback in this space years ago, and I want to try to pay it forward and help you out in that same way that I was helped. Sometimes I'll even say, you know, if someone's having a hard time with prioritization, for example, if that's something that you've struggled with as a manager, it's okay to share that and say, hey, and the reason I'm sharing this is I've actually had a hard time with this before and have tried to do some research on what might work here. So I thought I might share these tips with you as well. So I find that to be helpful. The formula that I go to all the time is situation, behavior, impact. So state the situation where you're, you know, reflecting on the instance where you're referencing to your employee, the behavior, you know, situation being in this meeting, the behavior. I noticed that you used the word "sibunt" over and over again to an audience of folks who are not in the fundraising industry. The impact of that was that many of the attendees, I could tell from their nonverbal communication skills, didn't understand what you were talking about. And as a result, your message was a little bit less effective. So, situation, behavior, impact. And using that to kind of open up a conversation, I think can help have a two-way dialogue around how they can improve in that space. I think the final piece of feedback is making sure that you as a leader are in a position to receive that feedback. So something that I say to my direct reports regularly is, and this is I stole from Radical Candor, which is a great kind of management tool, but is there anything that I could do differently that would make it easier to work with me? Sometimes I get feedback in real time. Sometimes, you know, they don't have anything to offer in the moment, and I'll say, you know what, that's totally fine. Just know that this is an open door. And anytime you think of something like that, I am open to receiving that feedback. And I have
Great
gotten some
question.
really good feedback from team members as a result of that question, and have tried to tailor my approach accordingly. So it's definitely most effective, I think, when it's a two-way street.
Can you share any examples of that response?
Yeah, absolutely. I just a couple of weeks ago had a team member say, sometimes I feel like you have conversations with leadership where decisions are made, and you're always very good at communicating the decision that was made, but we don't always quite understand the why and kind of the context of the conversation that you've had with leadership. And that makes it a little bit harder for us to then make decisions in a day-to-day basis, just not knowing what the kind of rationale and mentality is. And I thought,
A great
my
one.
gosh, you're right. That is so
Yeah.
fair. And so I can't say that I was able to like flip a switch and immediately, you know, change everything about that. But what I can do is challenge myself to think anytime I'm sharing a decision, what's the appropriate amount of context to offer for this audience, and what parts of their job might depend on knowing the rationale and the conversation around it.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's the most recent example. So number two, being invested in their growth and development. I think people perform best when they are in a context that helps them grow. And that is a formula, I think, of both challenging them and providing the tools that support them. The third thing that's on my mind is creating systems of engagement. So especially when you have a larger team, it becomes harder to as a one-off, remember those moments that can lead to stewarding and engaging your employees in the same way that you would steward and engage donors, right, in our industry. So I try to build in systems. So how do I make sure that every time someone has a work anniversary, that's on my calendar and I've got a note card that I write to that person, right? What are those other key milestones that are critical for team morale, like a giving day, for example, in the annual giving space? And how do I build in some intentional moments in the day for our team members to feel connected and inspired? Just trying to put systems in place for the things that when I was just managing two or three people, I would do as a one-off. Now that we've got a team of 22, I'm trying to build in those systems that allow me to do that at scale. Next thing is building a positive team culture. So that's not, of course, just modeling, right, the behavior that you want to see, but also empowering your team members to contribute to what they want their work lives to look like and how they want to relate to each other. And this is honestly the item that I'm working on most closely with my team right now, thinking through what are our rules of the road? What are the rules of engagement for our team? And how do we make sure that everyone has the ability to contribute to that and mutually agree to those terms, right?
And that's a tough one because everyone has a different viewpoint.
Absolutely. And like many of these things, right, there's not a right answer with a capital R. It's much of it is a matter of preference. And it's also a balance between how do you honor individual preferences while also ensuring that you have enough consistency within the team to know what to expect from each other too. And then the fifth thing is develop your emotional intelligence. That's my last thing, and that's probably the most important out of all of them. And you know, this has certainly been a journey of mine too, thinking through what are those exercises I can take myself through to improve in this space. It's a little more amorphous than a lot of the others, but I find is most important of all.
And what are ways that people can do that?
Great question. Listening and challenging yourself to listen when you are tempted to speak. That has been the most valuable for me. And sometimes I will go into a meeting if I know it's something that I would be inclined to come in hot about. For example, I will say, I'm going to ask three questions before I share an opinion. And really forcing myself to ask thoughtful questions of my colleagues, like listen intently and try to really honor the information that they're sharing with me before I come in with an answer. And that's an exercise for me because I know I am most inclined to come in hot with ideas and come in hot with opinions. And the best thing I can do is to sit back and listen and allow other people to contribute. For other people, that might look totally different, right? If you're someone who your comfort zone is staying quiet in the meeting, maybe your exercise is to contribute three things to that meeting. But really, just approaching your interactions and how you show up at work with intentionality toward developing the areas where you know you're a little bit less inclined to tend naturally.
So let's hear the five again, just with the sub, the subject of each five.
Develop a cadence of two-way feedback, invest in growth and development, create systems of engagement, build a positive team culture, and develop your emotional intelligence.
So these are great. And of course, none of them are things that we haven't heard before, things we haven't thought about before. So how did you develop this? Like, how did you decide those five things? It's not as though you're trying to make a case here. I think we all agree that those are important, but how did you develop that?
So, starting with a question, I asked a number of colleagues that I respect, both here at Hopkins and in other industries, you know, friends at cocktail hour, anyone who would who would chat with me. I was asking them, what was the best manager or boss that you ever had, and what made them stand out? What was
I
the
love
best
that.
team you were ever a part of, and what comes to mind as being why that team was great? And just trying to distill all of those conversations and all of those, you know, memories and stories that came out into some key themes to make some sense in the universe. And those were really the ones that bubbled up to me as being most important for a manager.
And when we first got started, I couldn't help myself but to start asking you more questions about the feedback. And I think you did a really good job of explaining why it was so important with your own personal example. And I love that we can use our own examples live time with our teams when it comes to feedback.
Absolutely. Being vulnerable, I think, is a key component of this. And you're not a manager because you're perfect. You're a manager because you are also on a learning journey. And I think it's important to embrace that when you're speaking with your team members and your colleagues.
And I loved your question from Radical Candor, which is a book on my shelf about how it would be easier to work with you, what are other phrases that people can use to start practicing, to write yes. down in their notebooks and just try on for size?
Yeah, great question. One that I will start out with, just as I'm approaching a feedback conversation, is I'll say, hey, I noticed a couple things in your presentation this morning, and I wonder if you're interested in some feedback. I think there is so much power in someone essentially giving you consent to provide them feedback, because they feel like they are in control of the interaction and that they have asked for this feedback, right? So I find that to be really powerful. I'm sharing this feedback with you because I care about you and your growth. And if I see something holding you back, I'm going to share it. So leading with the fact that you care about this person, I think can be really disarming. And especially someone that you have a close working relationship with, it can be hard when you're delivering feedback that's going to be hard to hear.
I love framing it as something that's holding you back, because that really depersonalizes it too. And it makes yes. it, I'm just trying to help you be even better.
Exactly. Especially for your high performers, the last thing you want to do is have them leaving that interaction thinking they're bad at their job, right? This is more, how can you take it to the next level? I also think it's okay to start a conversation with, I have some feedback that I'd like to share with you. And I wanted to give you a heads up that it might be hard for you to hear. We are going to get through it together. And I just want you to know that I'm sharing this feedback because I care about you as a person. So I'll even say, this might be a hard conversation that we're about to have, to kind of signal to the other person that it's about to get vulnerable, or about to get into the nitty gritty, but we will come out together on the other side. Of course, you want to use your EQ there to determine when the right times are to use that. But I found that to be a helpful phrase as well. Other phrases or questions. Do you have any ideas about what might help you do better next time? Do you have any ideas about what might help you be a little more specific in tailoring your presentation to the audience? So empowering them to be a part of the solution, right? You've just delivered some feedback, but ultimately they're going to be the ones who act on it. So empowering them to think critically about it. I think it's also okay to say, what am I not seeing about the situation? You know, after you've described the situation, you've described the behavior, it's okay to check in and say, do I have that right? Is that your understanding of what happened as well? A lot of times leaders are afraid to ask those questions for fear of looking indecisive or weak or a pushover.
Yeah.
But I think you get more credibility if you're not a little too in love with your own narrative of things.
And there's always another side.
There's always another side. There are always two sides to a story. There's always, you know, context that you may not be aware of.
Yeah. And you talked about engagement and the growth trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Was that number two or number three?
It was number two.
That was number two. So I want to talk about that, because there's everywhere I've worked, there's been conversation about the career path at this specific organization and the path for growth. And some places people buy into that more than others. And it's definitely a little bit of a sticky wicket, I think, at some places, although it seems like Hopkins is really good at it. Why is knowing your team members' future goals an important thing? What if their goals aren't what you see for them, or they're not ready? You know, it's a tricky, tricky one. And you've put it as number two.
It is. It's really tricky. And I won't lie, it has sometimes gotten me into situations where I was like, oh, I kind of wish I hadn't asked that question, because I'm not thrilled with the answer, or I'm gonna have a hard time getting them to the point where I'm meeting their expectations here, right? So but I will say, I think that someone's kind of feeling that their role is allowing them to grow, or is allowing them to prioritize what is most important to them in some sense, is directly related to their engagement on the team, in their role, and in your organization. When we speak with colleagues who have left their jobs, I can't tell you how many times I've said, it's because I felt like there wasn't a path for growth for me there, right? Or I hadn't been tapped for a number of opportunities that came up and I decided to go elsewhere, right? That said, I think there's also this really challenging trend that we're seeing in advancement, where the expectation is that people are promoted every 2 years, or, you know, whatever that number is for your organization. And as organizations, that's not sustainable, right? If we're talking about folks having 40-year careers, there aren't 20 promotions, right? You simply run out of room at some point in time. And so how do you balance kind of that organizational need with those individual expectations? What I try to approach it with is just as much transparency as I can possibly offer. And so having annual conversations outside of performance reviews around what are your goals? You know, where are you hoping to take this over the next couple of years? And how can we, in this role, structure a space for you to get there? I will say that is most important to me for my high performing employees, right? Because I want to retain and engage them.
Yeah.
It's challenging when you have a team member who's not currently meeting expectations or is meeting but not exceeding expectations, and they're wanting to have a growth conversation with you. And so that's where I think that transparency is so, so important. And saying, I am really happy to hear that you're interested in this. Thank you so much for sharing this with me. But I want to share that I would need to see kind of additional demonstrated skills in these three areas in order to feel ready to move you into a role like that. And let's dive into each one of those areas and talk about what specifically I would want to see as a demonstration of your skill there.
And that sounds like a conversation that you would need to prepare for.
Oh, 1,000%.
You wouldn't say that on the fly.
Right? I would not say that on the fly. I mean, right.
This is very relevant. I think I've found that oftentimes people aren't getting that feedback from their managers because it's really hard feedback to give. Tell someone that you don't think they're ready, or that maybe that's not the right fit or the right path.
Yes, it's really hard, and it is, right? It's a balancing act as a leader and as a manager around who you're going to be able to retain, candidly. And that's hard.
What it comes down to.
I think so. And it's, you know, the bottom line is you're never going to reach 100% retention, never, ever. And so what I try to think about is, okay, who are the team members that I most need to retain in order to both kind of maintain baseline operations, but also fulfill the vision that we have for annual giving here at Johns Hopkins.
So are you saying if you had that conversation with someone, the risk you're taking, and maybe this is why people don't do it, the risk you're taking is not retaining that person?
I think so. Yeah. There are other ways, I think, that we, you know, I think what's missing in a lot of situations is outside of a promotion, we have, and a raise, right? We have very few other tools to grab from to help retain people. That's where I try to think about what a lifestyle raise might mean. Okay, you're someone I want to retain. I just promoted you 18 months ago and I don't have the clearance to promote you again right now. It's going to be another 18 months before I can get you there. Can I offer some kind of flexibility to you that you would value instead of a promotion or a raise?
I love that. And saying that really clearly.
Yes. Or can I, you know, are there opportunities that you could leverage here at Hopkins? So the tuition remission program, for example, do you need to leave every Tuesday at 3 p.m. to go to MBA classes? Like, that is the thing that I can offer you and that I'm empowered to do as a manager. So thinking through opportunities there, introducing them to people in your internal and external networks. So, right. Can you give them a seat at a table they might not normally have a seat at? Can you introduce them to a colleague who could serve as a good mentor or advocate in some way to them? So just trying to build out our toolkit for how we retain people outside of those kind of like raise and promotions, which we know are few and far between sometimes, but also for high performers, you're just not able to offer them often at the clip that you want to.
And when it comes to positive work culture, I was having a conversation with some friends over the weekend, and they were saying that they had noticed that when donuts come to the office, everyone gets so excited and it brings people together, and it's in their office. It was something that happened somewhat frequently, but one of them said, you know, it would really be powerful if one of the leaders in our organization brought those donuts, and it wasn't just sort of a random person. Like, that would really mean something.
I think ultimately people want to be seen. That's kind of like a basic human need. And I think as a leader, it's incumbent on you to create those opportunities where people feel valued and seen. And right, whether that means bringing in donuts after a really hard day and just saying, guys, it's been a week. I know you're all working your butts off to get this thing out the door. Like, let's all gather for a moment to, you know, share some donuts and share some quality time together. Or building in those systems, right? Of saying, you know what, I want to recognize employees every year and say, thank you so much for being on this team for 3 years. Here are a couple of incredible things we've accomplished that we couldn't have been able to do without you. You know, when I think about when I've been most frustrated in my career, it really boils down to when I haven't felt seen or when I felt like my contributions weren't recognized. And so how can we as leaders create those moments, both kind of pre-planned and premeditated and kind of on the fly, to help people feel seen and valued and feel like they're important?
Yeah. One thing I did recently was it was a day that a couple people were traveling and a couple people were out. So there were only two members of my team in the office, and it was a quiet afternoon, and we just went and got coffees. And I think that was a nice way to just acknowledge, first of all, sort of incentivize being in the office, that those kinds of things can happen when you come into the office.
For sure.
But also just to take the time to check in and see how people were doing and do something a little mix it up, shake it up a little.
I love that. And I think moments like that mean a lot to people, especially, you know, those kind of unscripted times where, okay, maybe I don't normally work with this person or speak with this person regularly, but we can find a little bit of casual time. You know, those kinds of moments, those kind of kitchen interactions where you end up staying 10 minutes longer than intended. I think stuff like that matters to people. It matters to me.
Definitely matters to me too. Is there anything about the five ways to take your team to the next level that we didn't cover that you want to make sure people remember when they finish this podcast?
You know, something that has been on my mind lately and my team and I have been thinking about are, how do we invest in exceptional first days for our team members? And this is something that came out of, I recently read The Power of Moments that I really enjoyed, essentially talking through from a customer service perspective, what are those moments that make the biggest difference? First days are such an important moment in the life of an employee, like life cycle, that often get kind of thrown together at the last minute, right? Because you're busy, you have other things, you're clearly short staffed because you're making a hire. But I think that if you can build in some components of an awesome first day, like making sure everybody has a clean, nice desk or office space, they're set up with IT and have access to the systems and information they need to start their day, taking them out to lunch and having some less structured time, giving them some moments to connect with colleagues, putting up a little sign in the elevator that says, welcome, you know, welcome Catherine to our team. And there are many other good ideas I've heard. The Power of Moments really highlighted to me that people remember the beginning of things, the end of things, and then any kind of peaks and valleys in between. But overall, it's just kind of averaged together. So we've been thinking about, okay, if we want to engage our team members better, how do we give them a really memorable and positive first day? So that's something we're working on now that other folks might want to draw from.
I'm glad you said that. And it was a podcast maybe 2 years ago now where one of my guests said the way things start is how they usually end. And so really keeping that in mind. And I have to say, my first day in my current job was really memorable. And my team did a great job of welcoming me. And I think that is something that we have invested time and money into. Those banners don't cost anything. And signing them really makes someone feel like you were prepared. And I will share a hack on our team. We have a couple of decorations that we actually reuse. We put them in the desk area, and then after a week or two, we take them down and put them in a drawer and then reuse them again. And
sure.
It's great.
Yeah, I think stuff like that makes a big difference. And I love that phrase that you just shared, right? The way something starts is often how it ends. And I think this is just a really easy way to set something off on the right foot.
Well, thank you for sharing these tips, and I hope people enjoy them and put them into practice. You gave us some really good little things to try effective immediately, but I would love to close with, what do you know for sure?
I know that learning is so, so, so hard. And when you are in the thick of feeling frustrated and like you're not equipped to do something, like you've got some imposter syndrome or you keep bumping against the same wall, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're doing something wrong or that you're not able to rise to an occasion. Often that tension and that frustration and that feeling that things are really, really hard means that you're learning, because learning is inherently hard. We know this from neuroscience, and we know this also from kind of, you know, behavioral science. So this is maybe the reminder that I needed that I'm now going to give to other people. But when things feel hard and you're feeling challenged, it's because learning's hard, and that's normal.
And I just want to add to that, especially relearning, if you're taking feedback.
Oh, yes.
Harder.
Yes. There's nothing that will shake you quite like a 360 evaluation, right? Like it's hard, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. This was great.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Catherine. This was so fun.
Thank you all for listening. And I hope you enjoyed that episode. I'm walking away really focused on the idea that giving someone feedback is a gift. Whether it's positive, negative, or something in between, feedback is not always a hard conversation. Sometimes it can be a great one. I'm curious to know which of the 5 ways that Elizabeth recommends us to take our team to the next level you will take on yourself. For me personally, I'm going to focus on members of my team's anniversaries. I think that's a great place to start and a really nice touch point. And I know for me in the past, I've had managers who have done that, and it's meant a lot. I'm also really interested in the retention tools that Elizabeth talked about and just alternative ways to keep people with different options for flexibility and just thinking outside of the box. But more than anything else, my takeaway from this episode is that it's important to create opportunities that make people feel valued and seen. Oftentimes, people are valued and seen, but they don't know it through words or actions, whatever it is. And so keeping that top of mind is definitely my takeaway. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I hope you have a great week.